Why don't you tell me where your nickname came from?
All right. I'm just going to go into like the, I'm gonna do the long version of everything.
Okay.
this one's not that interesting, but it was like, as a kid, I read this book series called Del Toro Quest. Amazing book series still. Nowadays, it's like grade 7, 8 level reading though. So like you could crush through like 3 of the books in like a couple hours.
Yeah.
But it was really cool to me because like, you know, the author at like across like 8 books, there's like 15 now, that like there's something that was said in the first book that happened in the, was relevant in the 7th book. And like, it was a lot of cool puzzles put together. I just thought it was so cool. And I really liked the main character and his name was Leif. I'd also done like a project in grade 4 on Leif Erikson. But the book, the character in this book, it was spelled L-I-E-F. I started spelling it that way, but the issue is that's a real name. It's a Dutch name. It also means sweet or lovely in Dutch, and in Afrikaans, I think it means love. I didn't know that till later, but I just like the name. But so going on forums to talk about the book series, I had to do something else because Leif was always taken. So for a while it was Tay Leif, which is why my YouTube is that, because it was cool to spell Tay, T-E-H back then. And then eventually I'm like, nah, I just want something else, but I don't want numbers. I hate putting numbers in names. It just seems unoriginal.
Yeah.
So I'm like, all right, what about a letter? And I went through the alphabet and I got the X, and I'm like, you know what? X is cool. It's like, you know, that unknown variable, the enigma, the X marks the spot. It's symmetrical. It was a lot of cool things when I was 15. so the X was put on the end, and now a lot of people mistake the name for LieFX. I don't blame them. I guess it is kind of bad branding, but yeah, it's LieFX. And that's why I was just, the X got me the name anywhere. No one ever uses that.
Yeah, that's actually really true. That's a cool way to like have something recognizable but stay unique.
Mm-hmm.
And Lala and I talked about how important it is to have something catchy as your name, as your nickname, so you can just have something super easy to remember. So that makes a lot of sense. So I know you do a lot of work outside of Rocket League. Why don't you tell me a little bit about what you do outside of the community that we're used to?
So it's cool because like I'd always been in esports, well not always, but like I'd been in before a casting, right? You know, I was really into just video games and video game news and stuff on my YouTube, and I was doing a lot of like weekly gaming news stuff. It was really fun. It never like blew up or anything, but it was really fun to do. I just enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And it kept me up to date. So then eventually someone came to me and they're like, yo, let's put the, you should put video games in the bar you work, because I managed a bar. And I was doing that for a while too. I was running Smash tournaments for a bit. So I'd always wanted to cast. So then I got into casting, did that whole thing. But I always wanted to keep doing other stuff. So it was really cool when I got an opportunity to do what's called Heads Up Daily TV. It's a TV show that we're currently actually rebranding to try to push onto Twitch, which is actually going to be great because that's where our audience is. But yeah, it's all esports. Like we do 2 interviews with like someone from Brawlhalla, then a coach from League of Legends, and the next day it's a CSGO caster, and then we have a pro from Dragon Ball FighterZ the next day. So it's all esports all the time, just covering so many, like, well, I don't think there's an esport out there we didn't cover. So it was sick because I got to just be involved in all esports now and just kind of know the gist of what's going on in every single community, because I started realizing if I'm so in love with the Rocket League community, imagine that feeling for the people that are in love with League of Legends. It's just as cool, you know? It's like, even if I don't really care for the game as much, it's just as cool to be have that many people just involved. So being able to, or so passionate about something, so being able to be involved in something like Heads Up Daily was so cool to just see all the esports come to me and get all that information. So we have a lot of stuff up on YouTube as well too, that we just make content for that. We send people out to events to, you know, see new video game releases and all that stuff. So that's kind of what I've been doing on the side, and then of course the streaming stuff. But the Heads Up Daily was that really cool experience.
Yeah, I can tell that you're really connected within the esports community. What is it about Rocket League that you kind of drifted towards casting that?
So for me, I think it was that I got it. So I wanted to cast Smash Brothers, but I didn't think I knew enough, and I don't want to put myself into a situation where, like, people would be like, "Oh, this kid doesn't know what he's doing," because it's just, first off, not fair to them to have to listen to it, and then secondly, I just want to be confident whenever I do anything. I want to know what I'm doing. So when Rocket League came out, I was playing it for a bit, and I noticed that, you know, off the bat, I couldn't aerial right away, so I wasn't in platinum, which I think was top 100 back then in preseason. And but I was around gold one, which was decently high in that, at that point. So I'm like, well, you know, I kind of know what I'm doing. And it seems like nobody else knows how to rotate. And I think for me, it was that hockey background. I'm a goaltender in hockey. So I always watched plays develop, you know, like I could, I just knew how to rotate. And with three people, it was a lot easier. So I would always rotate and no one else would. And I'm like, I think I can help people. So I went online, looked for tournaments that were happening. They could play in as well, but also to see if I could cast. I'm like, maybe this is my chance to cast. So eventually jumped on with BVV, which Lawler did as well. And we met a little bit after that. But I casted with them. They liked my solo cast I did, sent it to them. They liked it, put me on. And I'm like, this is great. Now I get to actually help people. Like, yo, what this guy should have done here is, you know, moved into this position because it would have helped in case this happened. You know, and I'm like, now I actually get to explain things. It's not like I'm trying to keep up and just cast. I'm helping, you know. It was more of an analytical thing. So that's really what pushed me into doing Rocket League, is I'm like, I think I can help people with this.
Okay. Yeah, it's very interesting, especially at the start of the scene, like how much it grew just based on like the people that were interested in talking about it. Because when you watch like season one, there's not that many crazy super skilled plays happening, but it's just I think it really has a lot to do with how passionate like you and the rest of the casters were, that helped really bring the scene along. So
yeah, no, it's still like that. Like, I think our scene, more than any other scene, had so many talented people from so many different aspects of life coming together to create things. I mean, we had amazing graphic artists that, you know, end up getting jobs out of this. We had amazing casters, production crew, that, like, all these people that were behind the scenes. You know, like, you look at Scheist, who's now working at Psyonix, right? Like, these people came from the community because they had skills and they just put it out there for free. Like, it's overwhelming how many people, like, we had to doing that stuff.
I think it's really the shining example of, if you're going to start an esport from nothing, like, this is the way to do it. To get a bunch of people of their community that really care about the success of the game and start from there, so.
Yeah, I think grassroots, again, I came from Melee, so I'm very, like, I just love the grassroots feel. But I do believe there is some growing up that always has to happen. I mean, FGC has a bit of a problem with, like, we want to get bigger, but we don't want to lose grassroots.
Yeah.
I think grassroots is the absolute perfect way to start an esport. There has to be people wanting to play and work towards an esport, right? Like, it has to already be there before you can then put in, you know, more structure. The foundation has to exist first.
Yeah, absolutely. So you said that you played hockey, that you were a goalie. Tell me a little bit more about where you grew up and kind of how your interest for esports developed.
Okay. Yeah. I'm in Kitchener, Ontario, Canada. Born, raised here my whole life. I did kung fu for about 14 years, and hockey for about 18. Broke my hip. That's why I stopped kung fu. When I was 15. Everything seems to have happened around when I was 15.
That was a big age for you.
Yeah. So where was I? Oh yeah. So I was, you know, playing hockey my whole life. It's just, I was always pretty active. You know, I did parkour and stuff for a long time as well. I'm all over the place. You can tell even just by listening to me talk. So like, I always loved reading as well. That was a big thing. Just, I loved fantasy. Video games were fun. I started with probably Pokemon, I think, on Game Boy. Those were probably some of my first early games. When I ended up around 15 as well, ended up getting to just some disagreements with my, you know, my mom and stepdad. I was living there. My parents were split. So I lived with my dad for about a year before moving back to my mom's. When I was at my dad's, he was out in the countryside. So there was like not much to do out there. I had like one friend out there. So for the most part, the only thing to keep me entertained was like talk to people on MSN or play PlayStation. And a couple PC games. So I was already like diverse, you know. I was playing PC games, playing console games. I didn't care where I played it. I just wanted to play games, and that kept my time. So just that helped me get through a lot. And then that was also about the time that my depression developed as well. So I think it was such a crucial moment that gaming was always like there to kind of helped me through a lot of that. You know, I was out there, not many friends. I still went to school and had friends there, but like at home, I didn't have many friends. It was like gaming got me through a lot of those hard periods. So I think I just grew this innate attachment to gaming that once I was back at my mom's, I would come home from school and I would see Halo on ESPN, you know, top 10 plays with Chris Puckett. I'd see Walshy just destroying with the Ogre Twins. Like, it was so cool to see video games on the TV because I now had this insane attachment to gaming, right? So to see it on TV, I'm like, wow, this is cool. So I'd also watch it on TV. 2005. That's about, you know, the peak of Halo. So it was that moment that I started to get into esports a little bit. Not too much, but like I started being like, yo, it's cool that people can compete in video games. And then, yeah, it was a little bit later that Mario Kart was a huge start talking about, but Mario Kart DS, me and my friend actually had a few world records on time trials.
Wow.
Because we would literally just trade ghosts back and forth for the longest time. Every day we'd try to beat each other over and over. And we would find things that other people couldn't do, or certain on the time trial, certain spots you could like glitch through or whatever. Snaking, of course, the whole way. And yeah, we had quite a few between us time trials, world records, which was really fun. So that was, I guess, where my competitiveness kind of like was able to shine. And then now, of course, once I got into Smash, that was like my real dive into esports. So yeah, I'd say it was probably around like 15 that everything shifted for me, through being alone, having depression develop, and then that being a big point where I started playing games. I think that was the huge shift for me.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, if there's anything you don't want to talk about, just let me know. We can move past it. But especially when talking about like mental health, it's always sensitive. Mm-hmm. But what was it about gaming and the competitive nature of it that kind of helped with your depression?
Yeah, and don't worry, I'm fairly open about everything. I think it's important to talk about that kind of stuff. So what was about that? I think it was, for me, it was like I didn't have to. It was a distraction more than anything, I guess, at that point, you know, being able to play games. Yeah. As I was like, you know, whenever I was down, whenever I was sad, which was a lot of the time then, but it's like it was something to distract me, something to keep. I didn't have to just sit out there and do nothing, you know. If I didn't want to talk to people, you know. As I said, the other thing was like that was big then was like MSN and talking to, you know, Facebook came out a couple of years later, and it's like it was always about talking to people. But if I didn't want to talk to people, what was I going to do? You know, I had a couple other hobbies too. You know, I rode my bike, did some mountain biking and stuff too, but there's only so much that you can do. And especially with depression, you lose all that energy, so you don't want to go out, right? So
yeah.
Gaming was like that perfect thing to let my mind kind of escape away from where I was without having to actually put a lot of energy into it physically. I just mentally could just let myself release into a world that someone had created. And back then your imagination's still pretty good, so it didn't matter that graphics were crap. So it's like you could just drop into a game that's fairly empty, but your imagination would kind of fill in the blanks, right? So I think it was that was probably a big reason that gaming was able to help me get through depression. I mean, I also had super supportive family as well that eventually, you know, when I talked to my parents, you know, they were of course there for me, but gaming was that initial I don't want to talk to anyone, I don't know why I'm sad, I'm just sad, so I'm gonna play it. So it helped me escape and just being now. Of course, using things to escape isn't the best means to deal with issues like that and depression. You should definitely be active on it, but back then it was definitely something that when I didn't know what was going on, I was able to use that to escape and distract. And that helped huge. And esports now has been kind of an extension of that, where it's let me drive. You know, there's something to work towards. I always have something to better myself. It's not that I just go into a game and just play it to escape.
Mm-hmm.
Now I get to be active on doing something better. You know, Smash Brothers, again, was that a big moment for me that changed my mentality when I approached gaming. It's hard for me to play like single player games anymore now because it's like I just always want to get better. Like and the good way to do that is play other people that are better than you. It was Smash Brothers. I started to have the mentality of, you know, everything when it came down to footsies, baits, mind games, reads, conditioning, all that stuff. I'm like, that's so applicable even to life, you know? Like, I can take a lot of the stuff I'm learning from competitive gaming and apply it to things I'm doing in life. You know, I started realizing that it's okay to fail. Like, failure is a good thing. Like, it's inevitable. You have to fail to succeed. Because without failing, you don't know what doesn't work, and you don't know to avoid that later on. So being able to apply that stuff into my real life helped me just get better at almost anything I wanted to do, because I just had a proper mentality. I didn't get frustrated. I didn't get upset anymore that I wasn't succeeding right away. I knew that there was another way to do something, and I could then go through that process to succeed in whatever it was I was trying to do. So competitiveness, that extra thing to be able to allow me to be better. It was the activeness. So, you know, I had the escape, the distraction, but now I had something to actively work towards to get myself in a better spot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, obviously, dealing with mental health issues is different for each person, and mm-hmm. there's not like a cure, you know? So finding those things, I think, is really important just in kind of like pushing through those trials, and you discover a lot about yourself, like you said, so...
Yeah, I think that's the thing too, is, and there's different levels of depression too. I mean, depression never really like goes away. It's almost kind of like a blanket that's just kind of sitting there at all times. Some days are better than others. You know, some days it's just gone. It's like, okay, this is great. But I knew that it was just, again, it was that critical thing. It was the competitive thinking, I guess, of like, okay, this is happening. Why is it happening? How can I understand it? Or maybe almost more like a scientific methodology to it. But I realized, you know, it's a chemical imbalance. It doesn't obviously make me feel better, but it helps me understand the situation better, that it's just an imbalance of chemicals in my brain. There are different ways to help that, you know, exercise, distraction, all those things can help with it. You know, then there is medication if you want to go that route. But there are ways to push past it, and knowing that, okay, there wasn't actually anything wrong. Like, people aren't looking at me like, oh, this guy's stupid. Well, maybe some people do, but like, they weren't like, that wasn't a constant thing people were doing. I kind of created the image for myself. I was able to start looking at myself from a third perspective. Like, you know, I could look at myself from other people's perspective and understand what I actually looked like to them. And that helped me just understand that, okay, a lot of this is in my head, and I can still push through a lot of this because I understood it better. Again, it didn't make it go away. Just understanding it helped me be able to push through any of the rough patches and still put effort in.
Yeah, absolutely. You talked a little bit about how kind of gaming helped you to move past some of the trials you had in your earlier years. Mm-hmm. Now you obviously live a very busy schedule, I imagine, between working and all that stuff. So what is it that keeps you motivated to keep working?
That's true. That's actually tough sometimes. A lot of people, like, I think what helps is like the type of person you are from the bat really helps. I mean, at a base level, I'm a ADHD child, you know, energy here and there. But it's not always, there are times where you just use motivation. I mean, like, sometimes you it's the same in gaming, you know, as you get better, you rank up, and all of a sudden you hit a plateau and you're like, I don't know where to go next.
Yep.
Like, it's fine when you know what to work on next, but when you don't know what that next thing is, you kind of get stuck. And sometimes that happens even with, like, you know, with casting and hosting and all that stuff. You're like, okay, you know, I've gotten myself to a pretty decent level, but I want to get better. But I don't, you know, what to do to get better, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes you can you lose your motivation when you're doing it. Yeah, it's not like I'm 100% motivated all the time. You know, there are times where I'm just like, you know, the depression really kicks in, and I'm just like, I don't have energy to do this right now. You know, I kind of just don't want to cast anymore. And it's like, I know that's going to go away. And I think that's really a big part of it, is just that understanding of, okay, when I don't have motivation, there's a reason for that. What can I do to help that? Or maybe just understand that, you know, in a few weeks, I might have that motivation back again. And it'd be silly to make any kind of decisions right now. So that's one thing to help me get through it. I think keeping your mind fresh, you know, if I ever get in a rut of like, you know, even playing, like, oh, I'm sick, I don't know what to do next, I'm bored of this game, or, you know, I don't know what to do next to make myself better at casting. What do? I try to just do something else, you know, play a different game or try a new hobby out for a little bit, even if I don't know I won't keep with it. Yeah. Something to keep the mind fresh, and all of a sudden it makes that other thing you were doing fun again. I think it's just the way like the brain works, you know, like you strengthen certain neural pathways by using them more. And if you strengthen a negative pathway, something that leads to negative feelings, emotions, or whatever, I think that can get you in a rut and it can get you in a certain way of thinking. So you need to start letting your brain fire the neurons in other directions, you know, start doing something else, make the brain feel refreshed. It's like any muscle, you know, when you work it out for the first time, you're just like, oh, that feels good. Like it's that good stretch. So I think it's the same thing. Losing motivation happens. You got to understand that happens. So to push through it, understand it, do something else that will make you want to do that other thing again. I think just breaking out of a rut is a huge way to avoid lack of motivation.
Yeah, absolutely. And sometimes those ruts just come without you having an expectation and it gets hard, but mm-hmm. it's important to stay motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about when you were younger, what did you want to do growing up? Where did you see yourself kind of at the age you are now when you were 15?
This is funny. So when I was like five, like obviously things changed since then, but when I was like five, I always wanted to be a weatherman.
Okay.
You know, I'd always try to like pretend I'm the weatherman to my parents and like predict the weather. And for a few years, I always wanted to do that. And I guess I kind of got that, because now being on screen and camera, right? You know, it's like, well, when we did the telestrator sections on overtime, you know, they called us the weatherman. So I guess I got what I wanted there. And the other thing is, I also, when I was 15, I forgot to mention this, I wanted my parents to change my name to Leaf. They wouldn't do it. But I guess now, jokes on them, I kind of got that too. because now a lot more people know me by Leaf than Brody, which is really funny. I'll always get my way. Growing up, I actually went to school for computer programming. Half of high school, I did computer programming. And then college, I did 4 years of computer programming. I actually had three courses left to graduate, and I ended up saying, screw it, I'm going to Europe, and didn't finish it. So wow. I technically didn't graduate. I was really close. Went to Europe, traveled with my friend for a couple months, backpacked around, and then came back and I just worked in restaurants for a bit. I realized, you know, I loved computer programming, but I didn't want, you know, it's kind of got boring when I was told I had to do it. I just liked doing it because I could make cool things. So I really liked doing my YouTube stuff. So I kind of wanted that to get big, but like, I guess I didn't really have any like idea of what I wanted to do. Yeah, I knew what things I was interested in, and I always hoped that I could, you know, make a living off those. And I guess my stubbornness kind of worked. You know, I just worked in the restaurants for a few years while I also, on my spare time, put time into YouTube, put time into casting, whatever. And then eventually one of those blossomed into something that I could work at. So I think that was a big thing for me, is I didn't force myself into saying, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I just kind of did what I wanted to do. And then one of those hobbies turned into a career.
Yeah, I mean, the career that you have didn't exist even 10 years ago. So it's like, mm-hmm. it's almost like you almost have to stumble into it, you know? It's not like when you were 15, you could be practicing to become a Rocket League caster. You had no idea that was even going to come around.
It was so few. I mean, like Chris Puckett was the only guy.
Yeah.
Like he was like the only guy I knew back then. It's like, okay, that's him. And then of course you had a couple of your others, like your Golden Boys and that come up, but it's like, you're right. I think Halo was the only opportunity really for that kind of stuff. So, that's why I had no vision. I didn't know this is what I'd want to do until I ended up just doing it. So many esports jobs right now. And that's why I tell people, like, if you have something you like doing right now, there's, with the amount of people in this world and the amount of niche hobbies and stuff now, I almost guarantee you there is a way to make money off of it.
Yeah.
I think that's just some people lack is the entrepreneurial mindset. They're like, oh, how could, there's no jobs that exist that I could do this. Well, then make that job.
Exactly.
Make that service available for people, right? There's almost always a way to make money off of the thing you're doing.
And if you're interested in something, chances are there's probably a lot of people out there in the world that are also interested in it.
Yeah,
so
if you
make it work,
there are other people that want you, what you want.
Yeah, exactly. So if you can figure out a way to make that your career, all of a sudden you're doing what you love for the rest of however long it lasts, you know. So
mm-hmm.
It's always interesting. Let's talk a little bit about the actual RLCS lifestyle. Tell me a little bit about your schedule during the season. I know that I think last season you were there for some of the time. Is that right?
Yeah. So I had that big issue because I'm Canadian. Working in the U.S. is a little more difficult. I know Shogun's going through that issue now as well. So I had to get a visa, and that took me about a year. So I did seasons 1 through 3. I went to season 4 just as a spectator. And then season 5, because it wasn't in the U.S., the finals, I was able to host the finals. And then my visa was kind of getting finalized around that time. So that's why I missed the first, I think it was the first 2 weeks I missed of season 6, because I just didn't have, like, it had been approved, I didn't have it yet. So missed the first 2 weeks, but then got back into casting. Now, what was interesting about this year is I also had Heads Up Daily, which was a 9 to 5, Monday to Friday job.
Yeah.
So I had told them before, you know, obviously, like, Rocket League is my priority over anything. So I just love it. It's amazing. So they knew what come that time when I got my visa that I'd be gone for days. But my schedule ended up being like this. For season 6, I would work Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And then I would fly Friday to California, work Saturday, Sunday, fly back Monday, and then be back at HUD Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I did that for about 60 days.
Wow.
Straight of a lot. Yeah, I actually ended up having to, and I'd never done this before, but I actually had to take about a week and a half off. I tried coming back, and I just couldn't. I was to the point, you know those days where you just want to throw stuff and break stuff. You're just like on the verge of a breakdown.
Yeah.
It was that. I had pushed myself to my limit. So I know now where to draw the line sometimes. But it was nuts. It was insane how much you know, travel. It's the travel, I think, that really gets you, because it's a whole lot of just doing nothing.
Yeah.
I don't mind the work, like being on camera and stuff. It's the travel. You know, I got an hour and a half each way to the HUD every day. And then, you know, 12-hour travel days to California and then back. And then I was getting about 12 hours of awake time at home a week.
Whew.
Right? Like, it's not a lot of you time. So,
no.
Yeah, it's very hectic. And that's why it's like, you know, I always, at the beginning, you know, other casters in the industry, sometimes they'd message them and they wouldn't message me for a little bit. I'm like, oh, why didn't they message? I realize now it's like, because I also leave my Snapchats open, my DMs are open on Twitter, everything's open. There's anybody can contact me at any time, and even that I'll always do my best to answer people, but sometimes I just have to say to myself, I have to take a week to not reply right now, because I need to get myself into the headspace of, you know, working or doing things. I just need to do what I want to do right now, and that was such an important realization for me, having all this travel time and some of these hectic tight schedules once the season's on, that you definitely have to make some time to step back. So I started realizing, okay, those other casters that don't answer for me a week, they're probably just came off a season or a big event and they need that time to rest.
Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting how much time you have to put in and just to be there and moving around and stuff, so it's definitely mm-hmm. admirable. What do you like most about casting?
I think one of the coolest things for me about casting is just being able to, it's like, you know, especially with the RLCS crew, man, like, we're all good friends. So it's like, when I'm casting, I'm sitting there, it's like I'm just sitting there, you know, when you have people over to watch a game or whatever, have some brewskis, sit down and just chill and chat about the game. It's like that, minus the brewskis and too many people. It's just me and my buddy getting to talk about the game. Like we're getting to talk and everyone else has to be quiet. it's amazing that I get to just be a part of those moments and have people hear my emotions come out. I think that's one of the coolest things for me, is just, yeah, having that, you know, kind of I get to talk about this game and I'm getting paid to do this. This is insane. I do this for free.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that was, that's one of the coolest things. And then of course traveling, at live events, you know, as I said, it is draining being at those, like, just emotionally in that, because you are meeting a lot of people, but I still love that, being able to meet everybody in the community. All these people get together for this one thing that they're all super interested in and super passionate about, is such a rewarding feeling to get to meet those people, because those people are making esport just as much as you are. I mean, if those people don't watch and go to the events, I don't have a job.
Yeah.
Right. We're all just fans of it. So being able to meet all those other people is like another top of my list of like favorite things about casting and being in esports. The travel is really cool. You know, I end up just staying an extra week sometimes just to enjoy the area where I, you know, if we were in Amsterdam or when we were in London. And now, especially with backpacking, I have a lot of friends around the world. So now I get to go see them as well.
That's nice.
So I think it's just, yeah, it's again, as draining and as much as it is a strain on your mental health sometimes, it is super rewarding that I get these opportunities to travel the world and talk about a video game. And I think always keeping that at the forefront of my mind helps me keep level and just be super happy about what I'm doing. And that maybe adds into that motivation that you asked about earlier too. Just being like, yo, not many people get this opportunity. So I'm gonna keep trying to be better and keep doing this to make sure I can do this into the future. Yeah, those are probably my favorite things about it.
Yeah. It's funny because not very many people would get the opportunity, but a lot of people think that they could do it. So,
yeah, no, it's insane. I wish everyone, I honestly wish everybody, that's why it's so great. Like, you know, like doing the Renegade Cup and stuff with some of the casters that don't get those opportunities. That's so sick for me because it's like, yo, these people work their butts off too. Like I get to now work with these guys that are getting the chances to, you know, be on screen and do what I do. I think it's so sick.
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing I've noticed in just talking with other casters is everybody kind of has like their moment, their like Rocket League or their esports moment. Like for Lawler, it's the over zero air dribble. Mm-hmm. For, you know, Carpet, it was yelling Justin and Shogun. It's the This Is Rocket League, like iconic moments and lines. Do you feel like you have a moment like that that you can kind of pinpoint?
I don't know if it's a moment like that. I feel like I'm like, I play the support role in casting. Okay. I'm like, I'll just make all the moments good. I have my favorite moments. Well, it's not really my favorite, but I guess they're more like personal things. Like I don't care too much about having like, you know, my name up in lights or anything. I mean, it obviously would be cool to have that one individual moment, but I think, I think I thought of something. But I think for me, it's always just, I guess like seeing myself be able to get through things I never thought I could. There was that 15-minute break we had one time because in season two, when Marky Duda, I had to take a piss in the middle of a set that we had to fill for. And then there were some like PC issues as well. So that was interesting to know that I could fill about Rocket League, which in all honesty, isn't as deep as other games like League of Legends and that. And we had to fill, we didn't go back to the desk or anything. We just filled for 15 minutes. Something like that, or at least it felt like 15 minutes before the next game started. And to be able to do that was like, I'm like, wow, I just never thought we'd be able to get through that. So that, you know, those personal moments are some of the bigger ones for me. I remember there was another one that made some stupid like Bon Jovi joke as a goal went in. That was pretty fun. Maybe, you know what, maybe when Cuxier scored that 0-second goal against Selfless, I think it was that season one? That was really cool. And then, I mean, casting the finals was great. You can probably ask Lawler too. I think that was probably one of our worst casts, but at the same time, the best. just because we were so trash because you couldn't even understand us. We were so excited. But like listening to it, you can hear the energy. We are just so excited. Like the energy, it was pure energy. There were no words anymore. It was just noises coming out at that point. And like, that's kind of cool for me. But again, I don't know if I actually have any moments like that. You might have to ask like someone else if they remember a moment, but I'm more of just kind of like, I like just to keep vibes chill.
Yeah.
Overall, it's kind of like my focus.
Yeah, Lawler told me about the adrenaline he felt when you guys were on that call in the World Championship. Mm-hmm. And just how exciting that was. So
That energy, and you being next to someone that's also feeling that energy is just something unbelievable. You know what? It's not really my moment. I'm getting goosebumps. I'm actually got goosebumps thinking about it. Is the Metsonaris moment when the Metsonaris chant happened?
Yeah.
And you can kind of just see me be like, "What's going on right now? This is insane." Because when you're up there, you feel energy. I don't know what it is. It's like you just feel that energy pump through you. You could see it on Metz's faces. You could see it on mine that we were both blown away. It wasn't my moment, but that's one of my favorite moments. And then maybe that moment when they zoomed in on my face in season 6 and I did that little tongue thing. I think I swear I didn't mean it to be sexual. It was just I stick my tongue out sometimes when I panic. But that has to be it. And then Shitty Watercolor drew me after, so that was pretty great. That's my moment, right?
That's your moment. That's definitely your moment. So I've noticed that all of the Rocket League commentators have a really good camaraderie, and it seems like y'all like each other quite a bit. What's it like to work with your fellow commentators, and how does that chemistry contribute to your ability to cast?
Confidence is a big part of it. I mean, like, being able to, like, there's a difference between, like, trying to go into a professional environment and chat about something professionally with someone that you don't really know and just sitting down with your buddies and talking. Like, there's a huge difference, right? Now what we can do is have those buddies learn a bit of professionalism, and all of a sudden that synergy and rapport is there, and you can, that professionalism is learnable, right? You know, that synergy is not always learnable. So the fact that we all, like, I'm pretty sure Golden Boy had a big part in picking us. And I think he just, from his experience, he knows how important that is. And he probably picked people that he knew would work together. So having that is so important because you have confidence now. I know that if I'm ever in a rough spot and in trouble, I can just throw it off to my co-caster and they'll talk. They'll see, they know, because they've been through it, that panic, oh, he's got nothing to say, it's coming to me, and they'll get ready to say something. We're always able to lean on each other, and that's really important. You know, when you don't know how, it's a new person you've never really worked with before, or it's someone that you maybe don't really care too much for, because they just don't fit